And welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm speaking with Molly Kinder, who is a senior policy analyst at the Center for Global Development and manages the U.S. Development Strategy in Pakistan Initiative. Previously, she worked for the World Bank in Pakistan in the aftermath of the 2005 earthquake and in India on research study on rural poverty. She was deputy chair of the Clinton Global Initiative's Poverty Alleviation Track and has consulted for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Molly Kinder is the co-author of the Center for Development, Global Development's best-selling book, Million Save, Proven Successes in Global Health, which is required reading to more than 60 universities worldwide. Welcome to Background Briefing, Molly Kinder.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me.
And clearly there is a lot of money in the pipeline for Pakistan. And there was the Kerry Lugar bill that I think appropriated, about 7 point something million over 5 years?
Right. So what it did was it, for a total of 5 years, it authorized $7.5 billion, which translates to about $1.5 billion a year. Each year, the Congress has to appropriate that money, so it's not guaranteed. But what it did was, in that first year, which was last year, it effectively tripled the level of assistance we were giving to Pakistan.
And in February, President Obama requested $3 billion for Pakistan in his 2012 budget, including more than $1.5 billion in funds for security-related programs. So is that in addition to the Kerry Lugar?
So, exactly. So what the idea is that the assistance is not just military assistance. Previously, before this administration, most of the money the U.S. gave Pakistan was on the military side. What the Kerry Lugar Berman money did was it about equaled that with a development assistance. So half of that number you just said, so about $1.5 billion, is intended for development spending, so education, health, energy sector, and that's addition to the money that's given to the military.
So in terms of this Hearts and Minds initiative, and clearly there's a lot of anti-Americanism in Pakistan. And
And
it's grown over the years. And since a lot of this new private television stations have flourished, I recall at the time of when the Kerry Lugar bill was being discussed, there was all of this stuff in the Pakistan press about how Blackwater were going to take over, and this was all a stealth operation for the Americans to take over. And I think at the time people thought it was being orchestrated by the ISI. But it's worth noting that just following the killing of bin Laden, that many of these popular news anchors, some of whom have ties to the ISI, have been referring on air to Osama bin Laden as a shaheed or martyr.
Right. I mean, I think there's no question that in Pakistan you have two or three very important issues running here. One is that the conspiracy theories that run rampant in Pakistan they would make some of us in America sort of laugh that this is what people believe, but it's unbelievable the level of conspiracy theories and sort of denying sometimes events are happening. I think some of that is because in Pakistan, sometimes the worst conspiracy theories have turned out to be true. So there's that element of it. But I do think it's also fed by the second issue that you raised, which is the media in Pakistan. And it's both a blessing and a curse that Pakistan has a free media. It's a huge number of TV stations that have popped up in recent years. And on the one hand, it's a great thing. But on the other hand, there isn't the same level of professionalism and standards in journalism. So the sort of conspiracy theories are often fed by the media and sort of irresponsible journalism in a lot of ways. And that third thing, that sort of factor that plays into that is, as you mentioned, very rampant anti-American sentiment. I mean, unbelievable levels of skepticism of the United States. I think we've dipped even lower than what was already the worst opinion in the world of the U.S. And the media, a lot of the TV stations play into that anti-American sentiment and the conspiracy theories. So it's a sort of a deadly combination in terms of what that means for Pakistani opinion of the United States.
Again, I'm speaking with Molly Kinder, who is a senior policy analyst at the Center for Global Development, where she manages the U.S. Development Strategy in Pakistan Initiative. And previously, she worked for the World Bank in Pakistan in the aftermath of the 2005 earthquake. So what do you think? Let's go back a bit. Do you think that the initiative, the Kerry Lugar initiative, and our efforts to win the hearts and minds of Pakistanis are worth it? Is it futile?
You know, I believe strongly that when we think about Pakistan, which we all agree is probably one of the most important countries when it comes to our security, $1.5 billion seems like a lot from a development point of view. I mean, it's more than what we spend in all of Latin America, for example. But it's a drop in the bucket of what we're spending on to keep Americans safe at home. So every 5 days in Afghanistan, we spend the entirety of the Kerry Lugar Burman money for the year in Pakistan. So it's really not a huge amount of money when it comes to how important Pakistan is. And I believe that putting money into things like making Pakistan's democracy deliver better by helping the Pakistan state do better when it comes to education and health and thinking about ways to provide jobs for Pakistani youth. I mean, they have this enormous youth population, and just to keep pace with the current levels of employment, Pakistan's going to have to create millions of jobs a year. So there are huge challenges. That's why I think we should be giving development assistance. I think the notion that we're going to change Pakistani public opinion is incredibly futile. I mean, I was just in Pakistan 2 weeks ago. I cannot tell you how hostile they are to the United States, so skeptical. When I asked what Pakistanis think the U.S. can do to help their country, it would be like saying to an American, what can Ahmadinejad from Iran do to help your school system? Really rampant sentiment, anti-American sentiment, and it's fueled by a lot of things. And I don't think that the reason why Pakistanis don't like us is we don't give enough money. So the fact that we're giving development money is not going to change their mind. So I think there's important reasons why we're doing this, but I think it is a largely futile effort if we think that that money and that development spending is going to change anyone's minds about the United States.
Well, Mollikinder, let's then talk about the money itself and what's happening with it. There's been a scathing report from the government's accountability office that said that only about 180 million of the first 1.5 billion of the 5-year Kerry Lugar Burman program has been dispersed by last September. So, I mean, what's clogging up the pipeline?
Sure. Well, I think the first point to make is that number that the report quoted is a little bit misleading for us, because I think we're hearing numbers that for the last year, for example, we just got numbers from USAID that told us that last year somewhere in the ballpark of $600 million were spent. So that number, I think, doesn't refer to the entirety of the year. But there's no question that far less than the full amount that was appropriated has actually been spent. So there are bottlenecks, there are delays, and that's frustrating people in Pakistan. And it's frustrating Americans, too, who really want to see this money spent. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, one is that we quickly ramped up the number of dollars we're spending, but not at the same staff level. So it's taken a long time for the program to sort of get up to speed. And the other big issue is that there's a totally new approach to the way the U.S. is giving aid in the case of Pakistan, which is instead of giving money to nonprofits from the U.S. or from development consultants from the U.S., we're trying to put a lot of that money through the Pakistan government and through local NGOs. And that's a whole new way of doing business. Pakistan, as we know, has got a lot of issues of corruption and capacity. So in order for the U.S. to sort of have high levels of accountability in that money and to make sure we have proper oversight, it's just going slow. So there's a lot of things that have slowed down. Some of it is probably our fault. Some of it is just the nature of trying to do better by working through Pakistan. But the sum total is very disappointing and deeply frustrating to everyone who's involved.
And I'm sure you've noticed, Mollikinder, that the reaction from some of the senators, Frank Lautenberg, for example, has spoken out and questioned. First of all, he questions Pakistan's commitment to the fight from terrorism, and then questions why we're sending billions of dollars in aid to the country. And so has Susan Collins of Maine, suggesting there should be more strings attached to the tremendous amount of military aid we give the country, and we're giving this civilian aid to an uncertain ally in the fight on terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. So combined with what happened with bin Laden and the article in today's New York Times about which I just quoted from there, the General Accountability Office Government Accountability Office questioning why this money hasn't been dispersed, this couldn't be a worse time, right, for the very notion of sustaining this Kerry Lugar Burman bill.
Right. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head of what a lot of people, and not just members of Congress, but my own father called me from Buffalo this morning, and he had expressed a similar point of view. So I think a lot of people in their mind, they're saying, you know, if Pakistan is not a helpful and perhaps even a harmful ally in what we're trying to achieve vis-a-vis al-Qaeda and our efforts against extremism, if we don't have a reliable ally, then why in the world are we giving them so much money? And I think that's a fair question to ask. The way I would answer that question is when it comes to development assistance, the point of that aid is not supposed to be a reward, nor is it supposed to be a carrot or some way to buy Pakistan's cooperation. Military assistance is a different story. I think what we're doing with military assistance is for military ends. Development assistance, I think it never had the purpose or the potential to change Pakistan's calculus of what it's doing to help us militarily. The purpose of that aid money is really much more about strengthening our relationship with the government, but most importantly, it's about actually making Pakistan in the long run a safer, more stable, more prosperous country that's going to give us less headaches in the long run. And I worry that there's a short-term mindset that is, we think of this money as a payment or a gift, or we're either we think about it as charity or something we're buying. And it's really, that's not what we're trying to do with it. So as much as I worry about the extent to which Pakistan is or is not a willing partner with us, my bigger worry is that you're talking about a country of 180 million people, nuclear weapons, economic crisis after economic crisis, and a frustrated populace, and growing extremism, and that kind of powder keg of factors, that worries me for the long run, much more so even than the presence or not of Osama bin Laden. So I do hope that we don't think too short-term on our aid. I think we should think of it as a long-term investment in making a safer, more prosperous, more stable country.
Well, Mollikinder, adding to your nightmares, you brought up nuclear weapons. Our first guest today, a former veteran CIA operations officer, he said that given the evidence that somebody inside the military and intelligence world in Pakistan has been sheltering Osama bin Laden, which I think is pretty clear, he raised the possibility. He said, well, if this is not official policy from the very top, then if there's a sort of rogue element within the military intelligence service, what does that say about nuclear weapons? I mean, you know, if there's such an element exists, if they don't have the command and control that they claim to have, that raises up some really alarming possibilities.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think the extent to which Pakistan poses what I once heard Madeleine Albright call an international migraine, I think is true. It's the many layers at which Pakistan's problems pose a very serious risk to our safety at home is really very worrying, and it doesn't stop because we caught Osama bin Laden. I think when you add in, I mean, when we think about even what we saw happening in the Middle East, there are more young people in Pakistan under the age of 25, almost more than there are people total in Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia. You know, and you have a growing radicalism. You've got nuclear weapons. We have the concerns about the ISI and the Taliban. I mean, it's really a very worrying combination of factors. And you know, I think as frustrated as we can get with Pakistan in terms of our relationship and their willingness or not to be more aggressive in fighting some of the groups that are the extremist groups, I think we also have to think about it not just as state-to-state relations, but what's happening internally and what are the foundations of that state. And when you combine that level of low development and political instability and economic instability with the radicalism and with the nuclear weapons, it's very worrying. And I hope that we don't have a reactive posture and we get upset with Pakistan and we sort of get lost with the big picture, which is we have to stay the course and support this country.
Well, just in the last minute then, given that the Congress is in the mood for cutting and the Republicans are pushing hard and the Democrats are conceding, you mentioned earlier that some of the money that's been cut gets cut from the administration of some of this aid. So even if the aid's not cut, if they cut the people that are dispersing the aid, you end up with more bottleneck.
Absolutely. No, I think you have to have a very well-staffed aid mission, because in part they have to be the ones engaging with the Pakistan government. So I don't think the key is to have less staff. If, you know, I do think that perhaps there's a level of funding where we can spend the money well, and that does require having a very well-staffed mission. But I don't think, again, as I pointed out, what we're spending in Pakistan, though it seems like a lot of money from a development point of view, it's just 5 days in Afghanistan. And what we hope would be that might help prevent the need for some sort of military intervention in the future.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here in Los Angeles, Molly Kinder.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Molly Kinder, who is a senior policy analyst at the Center for Global Development, where she manages the U.S. Development Strategy in Pakistan Initiative. And previously, she worked for the World Bank in Pakistan in the aftermath of the 2005 earthquake. So let's do a wrap-up on today's program. What did we learn? Well, we started out with CIA veteran Robert Baer, who has conducted or been involved with a lot of special forces operations in his long career in the CIA. And we were talking, obviously, about SEAL team that was supposedly killed bin Laden and spirited his body out of Pakistan, 120 miles inland from the Afghan border. Robert Baer thought the whole thing was very improbable, that the official story from the White House doesn't make any sense, that you would have to have permission from the Pakistanis to bring helicopters in, even a small team like that, and that the president wouldn't take that risk as extraordinary as it would be. And, of course, Jimmy Carter was effectively lost his presidency because of ill-planned and ill-executed raid into Iran. But one of the things that Baer brought up that I thought was fascinating was that it's obvious that the ISI, somebody high in Pakistan's military and power apparatus, has been sheltering bin Laden. They put him in this compound and perhaps even built it for him, because that was a time that bin Laden dropped off the map. And he said that if it's not official from the very top, then it's some group of military officers who are rogue. And if that's the case, then they could grab a nuclear weapon, which is a really alarming possibility. We then talked with Chris Fair, who really knows Pakistan in and out, speaks the local languages and goes there a lot. She thought that once you accept the idea that Pakistanis have been, the military and ISI have been sheltering bin Laden and concealing him as a part of a program for whatever reason, then it opens the question of how long have they been this duplicitous. And it could even take you back to, as I mentioned, this could take you back to before 9/11. Did, in fact, they know about 9/11? And then that same question I brought up with Leslie Gelb, former Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations. He agreed that such questions are valid at this point. What is the extent of their duplicity, and how long have they been sheltering bin Laden and working with him? He didn't want to go all that way to saying that maybe they knew about 9/11, but it does raise some very, very alarming questions. And then finally, I spoke with Molly Kinder, Senior Policy Analyst and Pakistan Project Director at the Center for Global Development, to talk about what's going to happen to the development aid. Clearly, the American people are not going to be too happy that we're giving billions to this country that not only hates us, but have been sheltering public enemy number one, Osama bin Laden, the world's greatest terrorist. And she felt that that we should still give aid, because aid's not anything to do with you're not supposed to get results. You're supposed to do it for far loftier reasons than that. It's not so much a quid pro quo. And then she pointed out that it's only the entire aid we give to Pakistan is in effect 5 days of what we blow in right next door in Afghanistan. So in the overall scheme of things, it's not a big deal. But she did feel that unless, if that state becomes a failed state, which it's poised to be, then we'll pay a higher price later. So you can get this program at ianmasters.com. We can also check out my blog at ianmasters.com. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I would like to thank my producers, Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. Our theme music is One Time, One Night by Los Lobos. You can hear this program, sign up for podcasts, and contact me at ianmasters.com. If you heard something you like, something that you don't like, any suggestions or tips, let us know. We read every email. You can also check out my blog at ianmasters.com. Click on blog. I'll be back tomorrow with another background briefing at 5 p.m. Monday through Thursdays. Bye for now.